The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Hello, and once again, thank you for joining us on the Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have our senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino. And we have our junior correspondent celebrating a special day on the phone.
A special day was yesterday.
Yeah, I know, but you're still celebrating it, aren't you?
I'm recovering from the celebration.
Oh, all right. So a special day for those of you who don't know would be a certain junior correspondent's birthday.
Yes.
Celebrating 30 years?
200 years.
1 million years. Happy birthday.
Why, thank you.
A hearty happy birthday to you.
And a hearty appreciation of your hearty happy birthday. Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate you taking the time out to come here as of your hangover.
Okay.
So if anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com and listen to us on a live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can see Charlie and I on the high-definition web camera right now. Hey, what's going on?
How you doing?
And the phone number here is area code 631-888-8811. Now, usually we take it away with the news, but our very own senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino, has a few words to say. So now, a moment with Charlie.
Well, I have to say a few words. I've been getting a lot of cards and letters because you guys been referencing, you know, how you're feeling, and everybody wants to know what happened. Had a little car accident, doing okay. Everything's fine, everybody, and you know, it was wild. It was about 3 months, right? Three months.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So you know, you gotta start thanking the guy upstairs, and then you gotta thank your family and your friends, and you know, everybody checking in with you and taking you places. I feel like, you know, driving Mr. Charlie, because everybody had to drive me places. It was crazy, and. But I got to tell you, Smith, St. James is a great place to live. I was never without food. They had this, one of my friends owns Peter. He owns a place, St. James Pasta, and they sell Italian food,
right,
and other stuff, cold cuts. Oh, my God, you had to see the stuff I would be getting from there. I mean, as you could tell by my stomach, you know, that didn't suffer from the accident. And yeah, you walk in, and he works with his sisters, and there's a friend working there. So I got to say hello to all of them, which is Phyllis, Clara, another Phyllis, and Anna. But they have some great food. If you're in St. James, they're right off of Woodlawn, and between Woodlawn and 7th on Lake. Go in there, they'll make it smells like my mother's kitchen when you go in there, because they do all home cooking. You know, so every time I got a chance to get a ride there, I would walk in, you know, the back way, which was
right,
the kitchen, and it would be like, oh my God. And then Peter is always over there cutting something he's making. Go, here, taste this. All right, give me 8 pounds of that, all right? And so I was never at a loss. Those guys were great to me, and just the whole town. But if you're ever in there, St. James Pasta, they're all great over there, trying them. But I'm okay, and I'm back, and let's get going. Thank you, everybody, for all the cards and letters.
And make sure you tell them that Charlie sent you.
There you go.
So now I guess we'll take it away with the
take news. It away with the news, Mom.
Let's see. No sad news this week, so that's a good sign.
Nobody died. How did you do that? How'd you pull that off?
I'm sure somebody died somewhere, but, you know,
Yeah.
It's that sad.
We just don't know about it.
Yes, we just don't know.
Remember the old Mel Brooks line, everybody got to be somewhere?
Yes.
We have changed it to somebody got to die someplace. Yeah.
All right, let's see. I'm going to end with that one. All right, so let's go with some controversial news. Controversial news.
I don't agree with that.
For those of you who have been paying attention to our show, we've talked about this bench that that celebrities are on whenever they either screw up or get ousted from a show, such as the kid from Two and a Half Men, Edward Norton from The Incredible Hulk, Jon Favreau from the Iron Man series, amongst
others.
Although
he was off the bench and actually in Iron Man 3.
Yeah, for 2 seconds.
Yeah, in a reduced capacity, but they let him off the bench for about 2 seconds.
True.
So he could do the scene from Iron Man 3.
Yes. But one of which, who's also on the bench, would be actor Terrence Howard. And he spoke out about him being replaced by Jon Cheadle as War Machine in a Marvel Cinematic Universe in Iron Man 2. He says, and this is a direct quote, "This is going to get me in a lot of trouble. It turns out that the person I helped become Iron Man was in time to re-up for the second one, took the money that was supposed to go to me, and pushed me out. We did a 3-picture deal. You did the deal ahead of time, a certain amount for the first one, for the second, and a certain amount for the third. But the producers came to me for the second one and said, we'll pay you 1/8 of what we contractually had for you because we think the second one will be successful with or without you. And I called my friend and that I helped get the first job, and he didn't call me back for 3 months. Obviously, his friend probably is Robert Downey Jr. without him actually saying who it is.
Well, yeah, there. Don't give it away, Mark. But I want to know, after 3 months was up, did he get a call? Because he seemed to put it at 3 months. Because I would have said, did not call me yet. So was it 3 months and then he got a call?
Yeah, what did he say? What did he say in that call after 3 months?
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to ask him because it's not on my copy here.
Okay.
No follow-up questions.
No follow-up questions. You should prepare for follow-up.
Sorry about that.
every week you tell us no follow-ups and we never listen to you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I don't announce it as a no follow-up question news, though. That's what I'm going to start doing. Reported claims was that he had once mentioned that he was the highest paid actor in Iron Man, Terrence Howard, that he earned $4.5 million for being an Iron Man 1.
Yeah, because he was just fresh off of his Academy Award for that, I forgot, Hustle and Grind, I think,
yes,
that movie.
Yes, there you go. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah, I can do the follow-up.
And he said that he wanted $8 million for the sequel, but then Marvel said they were only going to give him $1 million for him to come back, and that's why he was not in the...
Only $1 million?
Only $1 million.
Oh, my God.
Wow. No. I guess he hadn't maintained his leading man status in the context. I'm not defending the decision, but I'm guessing that the logic was that he hadn't maintained it, so they were, that the franchise would last with or without him. They probably regretted hiring him in the first place because of how much money he was worth, and then they hired him to because Robert Downey Jr. was toxic at the time,
right?
And so they hired him to propel the movie. And then once the movie did really well, and then also off of the success of Sherlock Holmes around the same time, they were like, okay, this guy's a commodity. Let's pay him a ridiculous amount of money and get rid of all the excess financial weight. And that, that one of those, if not the most of those, was Terrence Howard.
Yeah, and Don Cheadle was happy enough to step in.
I guess. we don't know how Jon Cheadle feels about the whole situation, although I'm sure he was happy to get a job.
Yeah, exactly. And if you think, back then, $4.5 million for the highest paid actor in an Iron Man movie, and now Robert Downey Jr. wants, $300 million.
Yeah.
Or whatever he wants for the next Iron Man, whatever he's going to do.
Yeah, but didn't he say he wasn't even going to do another Iron Man?
Yeah, but then he threw out a number.
Oh, he did?
Yeah,
they're
saying $400 million.
So there might be an Iron Man 4?
For $400 million, he may or may not be Avengers, might be Iron Man 4, might, but whatever it is going to be like around $400 million.
He has a theme going. Iron Man 4 is going to be $4 million. Iron Man 5 is $5 million. Iron Man 6 is... It's the theme. The money theme, yeah.
So that's amazing how much a franchise can turn around a person's career like that. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Speaking of movie franchises...
Also, let's just make it 100% clear... Sorry about cutting into your segue, which was well done. That we only suspect that Terrence Howard is talking about Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
He didn't actually mention.
Yeah, in the quote, he did not mention who the friend was.
Yes.
But the money was to go to that person, whoever that person was, and to think about it.
There's a lot of underhanded stuff with Iron Man anyway, because the new Terrence Howard thing happened, and then the Jon Favreau thing happened.
Yeah.
The Jon Favreau. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of underhandedness. I don't know whose fault it was. It seems like Favreau managed to make an amicable deal, because he was, after all, in Iron Man 3.
Right.
In a heavily diminished capacity. But there's a lot of hokey nonsense going on with that franchise.
Speaking of hokey nonsense going on with franchises.
Nicely done.
Independence Day Part 2.
Oh, forget
it. Is set to open.
Starring Jaden Smith.
Has an official release date of July 1st, 2016, which will be, give or take a day, the 20th anniversary of the first film.
Wow, the 20th anniversary?
Years.
20
oh,
years
my God,
ago.
20 years.
On 2016.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
I can't believe it's 20 years.
Isn't that the longest we've ever waited for a sequel?
These days it is. Yeah, it's usually the next week, the sequel.
That's true. That's true. I mean,
or the reboot, either one.
They just did The Best Man's Holiday, which was 15 years.
Okay, yeah, and I think it was 30 years between Star Wars and Episode One.
But that wasn't a sequel, so...
Yeah, but you know what? I'm thinking... Was-ish. Independence Day. Do we really need a sequel to that?
No.
Is there, you know?
No.
You know, it's pretty much cut and dry. They came, we won, and we're back to normal again. I guess not. I guess, you know, the search for more money brought other aliens to this world.
It's gonna be Independence Day: The Final Battle.
Oh my God! Yeah, and then it's going to be Independence Day. We thought it was the final battle, but this is really the final battle.
But it wasn't quite the final battle.
Yeah.
But this really is the final battle. We promise.
Yeah, we thought it's like the Eagles. The hell freezes over tour. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hold on. Here's follow up. Sorry. Is there any announcement of who's going to be in it?
No announcements of anything beyond the fact that it's going to come out on July 1st, 2016.
We don't know if Mr. Emmerich is going to be the director.
Right now, according to the internet, which means, you know, give or take, whatever.
Yeah, which means nothing.
He is attached to the project.
Yeah.
He's attached to the project.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
right,
and
fair enough.
Will Smith, if he's going to do it, he requested a bigger trailer than he had in Men in Black. Yeah.
Anybody who ever wants to know what Dean Devlin looks like, he's actually in the movie Real Genius as an actor.
Really?
He's the Asian guy in the movie. He's the only Asian guy in the whole film.
Was that
he's
his name
Asian
in the credits?
In the dorm in Real Genius.
Evil guy. There's some credits like that. Bad man, you know. And so.
Asian, not evil.
Oh,
he's
okay.
The Asian guy.
All right. Well, you got to remember, they sewed on my right ear. Leave me alone. Okay.
Speaking of the Orient,
Mr. Segway.
Oh my God! How's he doing?
A movie theater in China mistakenly uses a fan-made poster for Thor: The Dark World as artwork, as opposed to the officially released Thor poster, which has Thor embracing hot Natalie Portman. But in the Chinese fan version,
it's stick figures.
Thor embracing Loki in the same.
That's
position.
Hot Tom Huddleston.
All right, I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that.
Gotta be gender neutral. How does he gender neutral in the new age?
This is my brother. I love him, you know.
So, yes, so they have...
And I'm surprised in the Oriental one, Loki doesn't have a little baseball cap on. You know, anyway, go ahead.
So,
just a thought. Go ahead.
Let's see.
Keep moving.
Speaking of Star Wars, since you had mentioned it before.
Wow, that was segue, Mr. Segue.
Ooh, new Star Wars. Boo.
In a thought to be long lost laser disc of Return of the Jedi, which contains pre internet bloopers and cutscenes, the owner of this laser disc has decided to start putting out cutscenes and bloopers from that Laserdisc online. So he released a new cutscene in which it has one line, an additional one line that was cut from Return of the Jedi.
Oh, from Yoda?
Yes, from where Yoda says, referring to Anakin being Darth Vader, "Obi-Wan must have told you long ago had I let him." Which would imply that it was Yoda who told
Yoda who
Obi-Wan
made Obi-Wan lie to
not
Luke
to tell
all
Luke. Yes, thank you, Hassan. So now it changes the whole dynamic of Obi-Wan's role, as opposed to being, you know, a bastard not telling him all the time until he dies and then he finds out later, as opposed to just following orders like the good soldier that he is.
Well, not really.
Not really.
First of all, it was cut out. And it was in, it's on an obscure Laserdisc, so, you know, that's hardly canon. Second of all, it's still choice. The guy said, "Hey, don't tell Mark the show is at 4 instead of 5," you know? But then that's still my choice to decide, yeah, I'm not going to tell Mark that the show is at 4 instead of 5.
He's following orders, though. Following orders. From his boss, following orders from his boss.
He's not. Well, Yoda can't order anybody around anymore. Everything is the temple was blown up, and he got banished to a swamp. He's not in charge of anybody anymore. So it's still Obi-Wan's choice to follow those instructions. Obi-Wan could have done whatever he wanted after that.
Okay.
Hey,
on a dead planet, you know, he's like, hey, this retirement didn't work out the way I wanted it to. this kind of stinks. I'm going to tell anybody anything I want. I'm Obi-Wan.
Hey, Hassan, this is sort of like a Herman segue, so bear with me, but I've been out for a little while. I just wanted to get your opinion on what you thought of that Geico commercial around Halloween. I thought it was hysterical. Oh, my God, with the whole family, the father dresses the whole family like the Star Wars thing.
That's a level of commitment that I've just probably never I've never achieved that level. I don't even know how to respond to that.
I with the baby attached to him.
As an enormous Star Wars fan, if I had come across that in the street, even I would be like, okay, you guys are weird.
I mean, just the ultimate was the dog, the Puggle, or the Pug, dressed up as Darth Vader, which looked really good. It was like, you know. Anyway, that was it. Sorry. Sorry to get Herman on you, but I just, I needed to answer. It was 3 weeks.
No, it's not Herman, because it actually stopped.
Yeah.
It actually had a beginning, a middle, and an end, instead of like, you know.
Yeah. And it was a real question that I didn't answer myself.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
So speaking of This Is the End,
Mrs.
Oh my God.
Last week we mentioned about the end of Blockbuster Video as we know it, as the last of the 300 stores will be closing by the end of this year.
That's great, because I still have a gift card that I can use.
you better hurry up.
Yeah.
All right, so as of this past week, the last movie ever rented at a Blockbuster Video store in the entire United States
was Video Killed the Radio Star.
Was the movie This Is the End.
No.
Oh, wow, what a crappy movie to be rented.
Because a representative from Blockbuster posted the photo to the company's official account on Twitter, showing the two guys showing the employee and the idiot who rented the movie. Because where's he going to return it back to? There's no Blockbuster.
He'll never bring that movie back, is he?
He rented it in Hawaii. So that was the last Blockbuster store.
What a crappy movie to be
really?
The list.
So, by the end of the year,
you
know, I mean,
this is the end?
Or even December.
No, I didn't like it.
Wow, I liked it.
You liked that movie?
I thought it was funny.
It was getting me very nervous. I didn't like it.
So
the end of the year means before even December.
Yeah, because they said the last last movie ever rented a Blockbuster Video was that. So maybe they're going to keep it open to get all the returns back in, but no more renting.
Well, they're all closed, so Blockbuster is over.
Maybe they're going to be selling their merchandise for the last 3 months.
Good, I got a gift card.
So they're still gonna, but they still exist online, don't they?
Yes, they
still
exist
online.
Yes.
Okay.
But that would make sense because working at Blockbuster in the past, the stores did stay open so we can sell off stuff as opposed to renting things. So yeah.
Yeah.
It's possible. Isn't that's what they're gonna do.
You know, the funniest thing about that gift card is that when I got it, I thought I was in like a sci-fi movie because I got it. I said, "Oh, let me go get something from." I go to the Blockbuster by me, and it's closed. it's not. You know, I'm going. When did this? That's how long I didn't rent from. It's closed.
That's because you didn't rent.
So yeah. So then I said, "All right, I know where there's others." And as I drove to the three others, they've been all closed. And I'm saying, "Did I live in this state? Was I living in this area for that long?" Or, and so there you go. That's the reason I still have the gift card.
They did episode of South Park, which I thought was an old episode about Blockbuster, but it turns out it aired last year.
Ah.
That one of the characters, the father, had bought a Blockbuster store on Halloween because he thought it was going to be a great movie night, and it was a deserted thing. He was looking out the window, looking for people to come rent. He's trying to get people to come. And I thought it was so on point after all the years of not being in Blockbuster, how well that was portrayed.
Well, Herman just sent me a DVD, a Blu-ray DVD player.
That
he wasn't using. So I go out and I buy Blu-rays because I'm really happy about this.
Right.
And they don't play in the Blu-ray thing. So I'm sitting there with a ton of Blu-ray things that I just bought. And all I get is the front logo, 20th Century Fox. All right, I get down, I get ready to sit. And then the logo of the movie comes up. And that's it. Cancel Christmas. Nothing else is coming
now we
up.
Know why he hates
right?
you.
So I kind of put in a call to Herman, you know, because I was appreciative, but at
right.
the same time saying, is this why I have this, you know? And he says, oh, there's a thing. I found that he had that for a long time.
Right.
He got that with a TV, but he had others.
Right.
And he didn't take that out of the box. And it seems that you have to upgrade it through a computer now to play the current.
Ah.
Yeah, who knew? You have to upgrade it now or call the company or they could send you a disc. You put the disc in and it upgrades the thing. So
yeah,
it plays.
They're doing all kinds of shady stuff with it. I went out of my way. This is a terrible marriage story. I went out of my way. I went to like 3-4 different Best Buys to find the special edition of The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go to 3-4 different stores in order to find one copy of it. And the guy actually had to go to the basement and get me a copy. And
he actually went in the basement for you?
I think so. I did not make him go to the basement. He offered to do so, and I was like, all right, I'll wait here. He comes back and gives me the DVD. No indication of anything odd or, you know, different on it. So I get home, and I pop it in to watch it. It's 3D. The 3D discs, so they're not even labeling them.
Oh my god!
So you know, and then of course, my Blu-ray player doesn't play 3D Blu-rays. So you know, the whole thing is a waste. I got to go back on that pilgrimage again to find the same stupid film. I don't even want to watch the film now. I'm not even interested in seeing it anymore. They've taken the joy out of the experience for me.
I hate that because you're so ready. You're set up to watch this. You're psyched, and you sit down, and all of a sudden, you know.
Something just jumps right in your way and stops you from having the fun that
this is why people
yours.
Go up on towers with guns.
Speaking of
we
putting,
do not condone any of that.
No.
Speaking of putting fun,
Mr. Segway.
Back in your day.
No, speaking of going on towers with guns.
No. thanks to those at the Make-A-Wish Foundation, as well as social media,
Miles Scott, a 5-year-old boy with cancer, became superhero for a day this past Friday. Miles, who was diagnosed with leukemia when he was only 18 months old, teamed up with Batman as Batkid, drove around San Francisco in his Batmobile to nab arch-villains Riddler, save a damsel in distress who was tied to train tracks, as well as take on the Penguin who kidnapped a local sports team mascot, with help from the police chief and the San Francisco Police Department. Executives say, "I've never seen anything like this go viral like this, with the outpouring support from across the world." So a little kid with cancer made a wish, and they dressed him up as Batman.
Good.
And he teams up with a guy dressed up as Batman to go around San Francisco, you know.
He's officially done more in one day than any of us have in our entire lives.
In our entire lives. And kudos to whoever made that happen.
The social media, you know, people, they put it out there, and just people just all, and there was crowds, and it was on the news, and the police chief had, you know, he called Batkid on the screen to help capture him.
That is great.
And they had the Riddler, you know, all full dressed out. Mm-hmm. Riddler, and he had, it was so cute. He had a little Batman costume, and he signed autographs, and he was, you know, he beat the bad guys. That was amazing.
Yeah,
that's
a nice thing.
So that's the happy news.
Yes, you've done a nice thing, social media.
And even happier news is that his leukemia is currently in remission. So,
there you go. It's all that crime fighting. We need him out there. So, he has to stay crime fighting for us.
So good job, Miles Scott, and the people of San Francisco for making this little kid a superhero for a day.
Yay. Okay.
And for those of you who want to have your news covered for us, you can post it on our Facebook page, or you can email us at mfc_studios@hotmail.com, and we might pick your news item for next week. And we are ready for our break. We'll be right back with the Came From the Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to A Came From Radio. It's your host, Mark Torres, along with our senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino.
Yeah, that's me. That's my maiden name, Charlie Sino.
And our junior correspondent, celebrating the aftermath of his special day, Hassan Guy went on the phone.
Was that the Road Warrior?
Yes, that was the Road Warrior.
That was for Charlie.
Yes. Thank you.
Road Warrior, see?
Thank you. I had flashbacks. Did you see me twitch? Thank you, Brian, for that. No. That was great. I like that.
So this week, we're going to be talking about the stage. What is the theater? We haven't talked about that in quite some time.
Remember, the play is the thing.
Yes, the play is the thing.
Brian told me that before I walked in. He said the play is the thing. And I said, what thing? You know, go ahead. Go.
So, I just wanted to mention that as elaborate as productions go, the big fiasco that was not anymore, the Spider-Man turned out to drop.
Oh, we had a lot of material on that.
Once
I'm kind of sad
together,
that's all over.
Once it got together, now it's a huge success. Yeah. And it is, I guess, one of the earliest forms of entertainment is the stage. And I wanted to talk about that just a little bit to see what is your opinion of how stage productions are now and how they were back in the day. Because I interviewed a long time ago the great Robert Culp, and he said that in the old days, actors used to work their way through stage before they even went to television or movies. It was like, you know, the training grounds. And that made you a real actor, as opposed to just, you know, your 15 minutes of fame, turn on the camera, and you're a reality show star.
And also, because I lived back then, it was that television people, the people who were, you know, casting these things, they would look towards the theater for them. So that's why it was that progression, you know. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It was theater and then TV.
So my question is, why is it now that the most popular productions are the ones with elaborate sets? You know, why do they have to go all out where it's, in essence, the best form of storytelling because you have to use your imagination? But now they're taking away the imagination for the production.
Well, you know, there's a double-edged sword to that because, you know, there are plays like that where it's elaborate and, you know, they want you to, you know, oh, look at this. And then there's brilliant plays, one-man plays, one-woman plays, where they just talk and you use your imagination. It's like a book. It's like a verbal book. And you're just making the scenes in your mind. So, you know.
But why make a theater show into a movie? You know, why have Spider-Man swing around in front of you? Because if you remember, we did interview the guy who did the Spidey Project, which was, you know, a no-budget production,
yeah.
And they had people with pictures of...
And it was great. We saw it here. It was great.
And, well, you know...
It comes down to one thing. It has nothing to do with creativity or anything like that. It's just, as we all know, the search for more money. Basically, that's it. The search for more money. Because when you can, like I said, when you can have a play like the Spidey Project or a one-man show where... you know, your mind is running wild. I mean, that works. I mean, the search for more money makes you want to grab something like that was a hit movie and elaborate on it, you know, in the theater for a live performance. It's what Cirque Soleil does. You know, they have elaborate performances because it goes beyond being a circus.
Okay.
It's like a huge production to... you know, stimulate the imagination.
And the Cirque du Soleil movie didn't do well at all.
Yeah,
they
made
a movie
right. There you go. There you go. Why would it? The whole idea between that whole organization is the live experience. You know, so I don't know. I think my opinion is... the answer to your question is just to get more money.
Just to get more money.
There's nothing creative about it. There's nothing, hey, this movie did good. We should put it on stage. They did that and succeeded with Dracula.
Right.
With Frank Langella. That was a monster hit. Phantom of the Opera. A monster hit. But it was, no pun intended, but it was... it was well made where you didn't have people flying and stuff like that. But, you know, it's the money thing.
That's, do you think so, Hassan, about that? Just the money thing?
What exactly is the question? The why do they do major productions of plays now?
The question, yes, why throw all that money into it if, in essence, a play should be about the using your imagination or interacting with the audience?
Oh, well, yeah, like Charlie says, it's more money. Plus, it's like, you know, you have to compete. There has to be a reason for people to come see your play, because plays are not movies. Plays are expensive, you know, a lot of them, unless you're off Broadway. So, like, if you're going to get the highfalutin, you know, I don't mean to sound insulting. It was usually the highfalutin folks that go to see plays on a regular basis, unless it's a gift or something like that. Like, and that, you know, a lot of the soda and hot dog people don't go run into plays on a regular basis. So. Yeah. It's a small market that they're competing with, and so I guess the idea is, aside from putting on a really good show, also to, you know, to also add an element of spectacle to it, so that people will, you know, be like, oh yeah, you got to go see this to see how they simulated the ocean, or the visuals were very beautiful. Like the turn off the dark thing. If you're going to do a Spider-Man play, you really have to. I mean, no one's going to sit there and watch a guy get lowered up and down on a stage by a rope. He's going to have to interact with the crowd. You're going to have that, like, hands-on 3D experience with Spider-Man, you know? So, the upper crusty types are not going to go running to see Spider-Man over, you know, Cats or whatever other, you know, major, you know, the Book of Mormon. Something else that's like critically acclaimed and artistically, you know, has a lot of artistic integrity. So, you know, you're gonna take kids to see, you know, Turn Off the Dark or something like that. You're not gonna see it yourself unless there's a lot of hype behind it. There's a lot of controversy, which, you know, if we all know that play, if for nothing else, it achieved controversy.
Right.
So, you know, of course, now there's an excuse for you to go spend $100 to $200 for a ticket. But you have to, it has to be a show. You have to come out of that place thinking that you've seen a great show. You can't just come out thinking that there's a guy dressed like Spider-Man running back and forth on a stage for 2.5 hours, you know, chasing a guy in a you know, crazen suit. It's not going to, you know, I don't think that word of mouth is going to spread really well on the subject like that.
I'm gonna go both ways with this, because when I was a child, I went to see a Peter Pan play, and the Peter Pan did not fly, you know, because that was the thing. Oh, Peter Pan has to fly. Peter Pan did not fly in this production, and that's all I could think of when I left, was like, hey, I felt cheated that, you know, Peter Pan didn't fly.
What production did you see? Because in every production,
it was we went on a school trip. I was in elementary school, and we went and
Did you go to like a neighborhood theater?
No, it was a big. Well, I was in elementary school, so everything was big, but it felt like a really big theater, and it was.
Wow, that's weird, because Sandy Duncan.
Yeah, I know
she flew.
Yeah,
and then the Olympic star, I forgot her name, who was in it. After that, she flew.
Yeah, but this one...
Mary Martin, back in the day, in the 60s, she flew.
She didn't fly. And it was funny. I'll never forget this, because the one part in the play where you're supposed to clap to have Tinkerbell come back to life, the audience didn't clap because we were not happy with the production that was going on.
That's a rough crowd.
That's a thing to do to Tinkerbell, man.
So you're like, we need your help. You're like...
That's partially your fault, Mark.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're partially responsible for
And
that,
did the
Mark.
Current come down play over because the thing was still dead? Nobody clapped it alive?
You're partially responsible, Mark. I don't care what anybody says. Because you know what? When you heard silence, you could have started clapping and you would have blamed everybody.
I wasn't clapping. No.
See?
So you know, I had to go back to school with some of these people. I wasn't clapping.
I would have clapped. I would have clapped in their faces. Maybe they didn't clap. I back to life, jerk.
But maybe they didn't clap because even as kids, you all knew the play sucked, then you wanted it over really quick.
They didn't fly, so we were already upset.
Yeah.
But on
the
other hand,
last time I saw a play was when I was in high school. I haven't seen a play in years. Has to be. I don't remember the. I know I can think of three plays off the top of my head that I saw. Four. I saw the Tap Dance Kid with Alfonso Rivera 100,000 years ago.
Yeah.
I saw Sophisticated Ladies. I saw Sarafina, and I saw Macbeth. And I think I saw Macbeth when I was in high school. So that's it. I don't think I've been back to a play since.
You're right. I have a handful of plays. I've seen Grease more than once, like two, three times.
That's
Cats.
A good production.
Cats. And Annie. And then I think the last play I seen was Les Miserables.
wow.
Yeah, Les Miserables.
Those are good ones. I mean, those are good productions to see. Like, they're musicals, and there's a lot of. I mean, Sarafina was so was Sophisticated Ladies, but Macbeth wasn't a musical. Macbeth was pretty.
Yeah, Macbeth. That was.
That was kind of like,
don't go in there. Don't go in there if you have mood swings to see Macbeth.
Yeah.
Seriously, that's just my advice, folks. It's
very true.
With the exception of the Peter Pan, I've only seen two plays in my entire life. One of them was Sherlock Holmes' Last Case with Frank Langella as Sherlock Holmes.
Wow.
And that was great, and it was mostly just dialogue, and I was amazed by how great it was without the spectacle of a play.
Well,
I was like, wow, was
right.
It?
Yeah,
and they explained how it was Watson who tried to kill him because he was jealous.
Yeah.
And then he went on this tremendous monologue of how he escaped the death trap that was, in one breath. He just went through this thing, and the audience went crazy because it was an amazing performance.
Right.
And then the last thing I saw was Wicked. I saw that this year. And
better than we are.
That was an elaborate production.
Yeah.
So I seen both ends, and I enjoyed them equally, but I felt like, why are they trying to make a play like a movie when a play should be a play and a movie should be movie and a book should be a book? And
the question should be, which one were you entertained more by?
I was equally entertained by both of them. And that was the thing.
It
wasn't even like, oh, this was better or not. I was like, what was the point of being all this extravagance to the play?
Which is ironic. I did forget one play that I saw. I did see a Sherlock Holmes play. It was when I was in England, though. I was in England on a class trip, and we went to see. I don't even know who was in it, but I remember the show, but I don't know who the stars were who were in the play.
Right.
It was a pretty major theater. It was a gigantic place, and it was the premise of it that was that Sherlock Holmes was faking Moriarty. That Moriarty wasn't real. And Sherlock Holmes was doing double duty as Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty. And then he fake killed himself because he didn't want to be a detective anymore.
Right.
But I remember that which was a really great idea for the story. I remember the main thing about the play was that there was a table. It was like a little coffee table or a kitchen table in like a breakfast table and two chairs. And that was the whole production. And they used that breakfast table and two chairs for every scene. I mean, and supposedly they had gone, it wasn't just one guy telling a story from a kitchen. It was, that breakfast table was supposed to represent, like, an office table at one point, a police desk. Yeah. And then the only other special effect was at the Reichenbach Falls scene, because the play was narrated by Watson. And so Watson was talking about, like, okay, yeah, and then we did this one case, and then all of a sudden, the unthinkable happened. And then he turned around, the actor turned around, and suddenly they had dry ice coming down from the top of the stage, from the top of the veranda, the backdrop.
Right.
And the dry ice fell down, and then he played the sound of rushing water. And he, the guy playing Watson started yelling out, Holmes, Holmes, looking for Holmes, that's supposedly after he fell off the fall. And you know what? You actually did think he was screaming at a waterfall. It was fantastic. And they had no production. There was nothing there. So, and I know I forgot to to talk about this when I mentioned the other plays that I'd seen. But I remember some of the scenes in that play more so than I could tell you. I mean, the Tap Dance Kids, for God's sake, they built a tram, like the one that goes over to Roosevelt Island.
Right.
They literally built a tram so Alfonso Ribeiro could go from one side of the stage to the other, supposedly indicating that he was in the city taking in the sights, right? And it was an actual working tram that he got into, and it went went diagonal from the left side of the stage to the right side.
Well,
and
they
everything about that entire play that I remember.
They just rerouted the Roosevelt tram. It was
probably. It was probably. But I mean, I don't remember any other. You know, some of the other plays actually had props and sets and you know, tables and doors and buildings. I don't remember anything more than I remember that Sherlock Holmes play with a breakfast table and two chairs. So, you know, as Charlie says, it's if you can remember the play was a good play because you remember it, because you remember the performances and you remember mm-hmm. the story.
Yeah.
So the spectacle thing doesn't have anything to do with anything.
So,
really.
So I think in that case, it's really the audience's fault and the producers saying that, oh, we can't get them in or enjoy this production without all the flash, and they're taking the audience for granted. They don't give them the intelligence that back in the day they used to need.
You just said the key word, intelligence, because like we always say about the independent filmmakers who don't have
exactly,
you know, they're the ones that you need to watch. You're the ones that come up with the great ideas. They have the amazing movies because they don't have a lot to work with, but their imagination and their intelligence. And and they have to make it work that way because they don't have a big budget. So I feel that that's the better way to go. But then, you know, eventually they become mainstream. It all goes to hell in a handbag.
Yeah.
But
they're wrong until they're right, and they're right until they're wrong.
Yes,
you know, they're absolutely wrong about, like, the, you know, what the audience wants.
Right.
Up until some point where the audience actually confirms, no, we want spectacle. We want a big show. And then they're you know, they're right about the spectacle and the big show up until the point where the audience changes and decides, we want character. We want,
right.
We want intricacy. And so they're right until they're wrong, and they're wrong until they're right, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the thing is, in these days with the price of the ticket, the audience doesn't care. The audience doesn't want it. It's the promo people telling the audience what you want. You know, this is what you want. You got to see this thing. They don't say you got to see this thing because they're not like from Brooklyn. You have to see this play because
on the marquee, you got to see
this thing. they just say, oh, spectacular. You know, you need to see it. And you're nothing if you don't go and see this movie and talk about it, or this play and talk about it with your friends.
I'm reminded of the great actor, that's Christian Bale.
Which I'm
he
not laughing
was being that. Interviewed, and when
and he hit the guy
before Terminator 4 came out, Terminator
wow,
Salvation,
too bad.
And he said that the reason why he took the role and why he was in that movie was because the movie played like a play, and all the special effects was an afterthought. Of course, after watching the movie, I know he was completely out of his mind by saying that because the movie was a terrible movie in and of itself, and the special effects helped it along. So maybe that's what it is, that the play is the essence of the performance, and the special effects, the CGIs have what the movie makers have fallen or rely on, as opposed to the actual integrity of the performance.
And as we learned, you have to play the two of them together. You can't play, you know, as if the special effects wasn't there, because that was the gripe that, in Thor, the first Thor. Who is that really great actor? Anthony Hopkins. Yes.
Yeah.
He had the complaint that he had to stop every five seconds for a special effect cue. And him as a seasoned actor, you know, to do that had to be an eye opener.
Yeah.
You know,
I was watching the making of, because that's, those are the only two DVDs in the set that I bought that weren't 3D. So I was watching the making of The Hobbit and the elaborate stuff that they had to go through to make Gandalf. I know you haven't seen it, Mark, because you refuse to watch.
I'm getting movies. There. I saw The Hobbit.
You saw the Hobbit. You actually watched The Hobbit, even though knowing that there's going to be two more.
Yeah.
You broke your rule.
No, I'm okay, watching it in order. It was the first episode, so I figured I'd see it in theater, and I'll go see the other two, right, and then see the other three.
Mm. Fair enough. There's the scene where they're in Bag End, they're in the Bilbo's house, and
right,
you know, of course, Gandalf is two times taller than everybody because he's normal size, and everybody else is a dwarf. They had to shrink down the set and put Ian McKellen on a green screen set that was half the scale of the actual set of Bag End. And they had him do his scenes simultaneous with filming the scenes with the other dwarves. And then they were able to digitally place him in the scenes with the dwarves, although when they placed him, he was actually twice as big as everybody. And Ian McKellen had a fit. They showed a couple of segments of him losing his mind because he couldn't act with anybody. Everybody else was on another set. He was supposed to interact with them, but he couldn't actually see anybody's faces. He could only hear them through the earpiece,
right,
that he had. And he said, you know, if we're going to have to do the movie like this, if this is what it costs to do these special effects, to do these movies, I don't even want to be in this movie. And they had to talk him down.
Wow.
They had to, you know, they had to talk him into doing the part.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I mean, after a while, and I completely agree with you, like, you know, after a while, the spectacle is overpowering every facet of the medium, you know? And it doesn't really work on us anymore. Nobody cares. The Total Recall, that movie, I think that movie is a beautiful movie. And the only thing that movie really has is its special effect. Is it, you know, the depiction of futuristic cities and stuff like that.
Right.
Nobody blinked. Nobody even... Everyone said that movie was horrible. Now, there was some flawless special effects in that film, but nobody cared.
The car
nobody
race scene was
by that
amazing.
Stuff anymore.
You, speaking as an old, you know, Middle Earth and Hobbit fan since the 70s, that is the only way they could have did justice to all these movies, the trilogy and this, and The Hobbit, was now with what they have with the special effects. Because they tried it before, and I'm telling you, all the real religious fans of The Hobbit just do not buy into those other movies, especially the cartoon version.
So maybe it doesn't belong in the theater. If it's a book, it's a book.
No possible way you could do that, because otherwise they would have to do what they did with The Wizard of Oz, get all Munchkin actors, because you can't, you know.
All right, so we have 3 minutes left. So Hassan, final thought?
The play is the thing.
Play is the thing.
Yes.
All right. Charlie, final thought?
No, I really don't have a final thought, but I'll try. Yeah, it's all a money game. It's basically that simple. It's all a money game. People wouldn't be doing it if they didn't think they would be making a big bundle. So obviously they didn't expect people to go to lunch and not tying off cables. But, you know, it's a moneymaker. So
I say expect more from the performance of what you're going to go see. If you're paying money for it, you should be satisfied with what you get. And that about does it for this week on It Came From The Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you miss any portion of the show, you can go on our website, www.itcamefromtheradio.com.
It's been 3 months. I lost it. I'm sorry.
And catch up on the archives, which will be up in a day or so. And we'll see you next week.
Take it easy.
Take it easy.
You have been listening to It Came From The Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.